On the show now, we welcome Colette. Hi, Colette.
Hello, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm good, Colette. Now, you've contacted us because you've concerns about the Clonmany Road. It's already witnessed some severe, several collisions, and locals are actually afraid to use this road, I've been told by others, Colette. So what can you be a bit more specific for those outside the area, what the stretch of road is like, and describe it to us?
Yeah, well, the road extends from the North Pole Bar in Dumfries, outside Bunkrana, to Clonmany, the town that has about 150,000 people living in it and its environs and Oris, right? And that road is a ribbon road. Two cars meeting each other on the road are almost shaving each other going past. And there's room for widening the road on both sides of the road. And it's so dangerous with bad bends. And it is life-threatening to be on it.
Mm.
You know, it's so dangerous, like. And, like, I know a man now, and he wasn't an engineer, and he's moved up into the Clonmany sheltered housing village. And he comes to visit his daughter. The only independence he has is his car. He comes to visit his daughter in Bunkrana every day, and she has to take another car down, drive him down at night because the road's so dangerous. And, you know, her husband collects her then in his car. And, like, the poor man, I mean, it's threatening his independence. And all those old age pensioners, an old age pensioner killed on that road along with eight young people. And the old age pensioners are afraid to go to Bingo and Bunkrana. And like, they have to use that road. And I'm surprised and shocked that the TDs, Patrick McLaughlin and Charlie McConlough, and their representatives, Jack Murray on the council, and Rena Donaghy and Nicholas Crossan, and none of them has even approached or broach the road, you know, to bring it up at council so that the council can demand money of the government to widen that road. Nobody is doing nothing.
Has it
right.
always been the
Absolutely
case, or has it always been as dangerous, or is this a stretch of road that's seen more traffic now?
Greg, it's been as dangerous. It's been as dangerous. It has never changed since whenever they built that road. It has never changed. And I just can't believe that the politicians are sitting up there with their eyes closed, and they're doing nothing for any show.
And you
I just
feel
can't
that
believe it.
Like, you, I mean, obviously, neither you or I are road engineers, Claire, but you feel that if the will was there, it wouldn't be a monumental job to widen it?
If the will was there, Greg, it would take nothing to widen it. I mean, they're widening Letterkenny, they're doing X, Y, and Z all over the place, but Clonmany Village is forgotten about, and Bunkrana. You know, how long did it take for them to widen that bridge, Cockhill Bridge in Bunkrana? Sure, it took donkey's years. You know, they had to form a committee to get it going and have public meetings. Well, I reckon in Clonmany that's what they should do. Form a committee to get that road widened. It's a disgrace.
All right, okay. Let's see what others think. Thank you very much for that, Colette. Colette, the Clonmany to the Clonmany Road, effectively saying it is there have been several collisions there, sadly loss of life as well. Local people and Colette particularly talking of the elderly afraid to drive at night and believes that actually it is infringing on their freedoms. She says the roads needs to be widened and has called out politicians from council to Dáil across the political spectrum, claiming that they have not done enough to seek funding to get this road widened. What are our public representatives doing about it? Colette asked. A good time to ask in the run-up to a council election, I would imagine, and a general election. 086 60 25,000, if that resonates with you and if you agree with Colette there. I'm so happy to hear Felicia and Tony just when people entered this country, there was a better assessment of abilities and they were allowed to work in their fields to help our country as opposed to the way the system is working. What I will say, and I don't want to come across as all woke and all that kind of stuff, we're a platform for the whole community, all different elements of the community. The text, that message presumes that people coming to this country have no ability and nothing to add to it. And I really hope you don't think I'm being argumentative, but I'll read it again. I'm just so happy to hear Felicia and Tony. I wish that when people enter the country, there's a better assessment of their abilities. So in other words, they're welcome because they're educated here and their children are being educated here and they're working. But then it's presumed that other people coming to this country, and this is maybe where some people have been influenced, that they're only coming in to sponge off the dole. Well, Tony was quick to point out is that they're not, and they want to, they have something to add and want to add. Other people will disagree, and I get that, and will think that the numbers are crazy and we need to do something. There should be a referendum. I hear you. I understand exactly what you're saying. But I understand, I respect what you're saying, whether I understand it or agree is neither here nor there. But we also can't presume that everyone that comes here is not coming here with skills and to work. Greg, the Nigerian lady, fantastic. She knows what Irish people are thinking. Another, to be honest, not like today, but years ago, if children or even adults might have looked or stared at black people, it most likely was because they've not seen them before in Donegal or indeed in Ireland. We'd never seen people of colour years ago. I remember saving all the pennies to send to Ethiopia and what have you. It's not racist. It's what we were told at the time, indeed. And I don't think anyone's being overly defensive, but just recognising that things are changing. I'm an Irish man with a British accent and Donegal people treat me badly. It's not always about the colour of your skin. Another, it's funny how times have changed. Years ago, it used to be no dogs, no blacks, no Irish. Indeed. And that was a reality. And even in my time, when I worked in England, it was not necessarily on. It was not necessarily on posters at doors outside accommodation, but you definitely could get a sense that it was Irish, black people, Asian people were all viewed as the same. I think deep down people are not racist. People are very angry at what's happening. People are coming here and they're handed places to live, free medical and dole every week, whereas there are people out there struggling big time. If I became unemployed, I'd get money for 6 months. Then I have to rely on my husband. Where are people coming into this country are entitled to the same that I worked hard for? Yes, the Irish went all over the world, but they worked hard, as many people went to a country where they knew no one and were entitled to nothing. I get exactly what you're saying, and it does feel unfair. The system does feel unfair, of course. The difference is when we go to Australia, we're allowed to work. When people come here, they aren't allowed to work, many of them. We were talking on various issues here, by the way. Caroline, that person hasn't joined the conversation yet, by the way. Anne in Burton Port, I did a urine sample in the doctor's surgery. I was not charged. I'm a medical card holder. This is off a call earlier on. A listener's 16-year-old daughter gets regular UTIs. Up until now, they got a urine sample tested and were given an antibiotic. They're on a medical card now. They're being charged €15 each time. So that's a caller saying that they are still, getting them for free, in inverted commas. It's not for free. It's paid through direct taxation, which we all pay. The voting cards were late this year. Get on to someone who looks after the register in the area and ask them to remove the deceased from the register. Bring a death cert and the relative can remove them themselves. Another, you can also tell your postman that the relative is dead and they'll put a pink sticker on all posts to say they are deceased. Tell people to please bring ID tomorrow. 1 in 4 people will be asked for ID. I'm a presiding officer and this is what we're asked to do. You will be turned away if you don't have ID. Read the electoral register. This happened to me recently. My mum passed away 2 years ago and last week I got a polling card for her. I called the council and they put me through to the relevant section and they took my details and said they would take care of it. Okay, because we've struggled really, to be honest with you, online and through contacts to find out precisely and in a simple way how someone removes a deceased relative from the register. Husband living and working here for 20 years. He can't vote in any referendums. You have to be an Irish citizen to vote on referenda. It's not the same for other elections and what have you, but you have to be an Irish citizen to vote in the referenda because, of course, I presume it's because they it's changing the constitution, which is a very important document. So that's the rules, unfortunately. So your husband might be here for 20 years, but he is not officially an Irish citizen, it would seem. All right, let's take a quick commercial break. Loads to come on the 9 till noon show. Dr. Francis Rees is a lecturer in law at Essex Law School of University of the University of Essex and joins us now. Good morning, Dr. Rees. How are you getting on?
Good morning, Greg. It's lovely to hear from you. Yeah, I'm doing well, thank you.
That's
busy,
good.
but doing great.
I suppose it's not really surprising because I'm not the target demographic, but I wasn't actually really aware that child influencers existed. And you're calling for a new set of guidelines to be drawn up to protect child influencers. This obviously to limit the harm being caused to their, I suppose, their development, their education, their dignity and their privacy. So what does a child influencer look like and what are they doing?
Thanks for the question. So obviously in terms of the social media platforms' awareness of the children shouldn't technically be there in their minds because the children would have to be over 13 to have an account in their own right. So what we're looking at really is family influence or family activities. If you see it in more mainstream social media like YouTube Kids, for example, and we see toy unboxing and play, but that's kind of spread out now across all the social media platforms like TikTok, Instagram, etc. So we're talking about parents or guardians taking control of the accounts and introducing their children through the account. And brands identifying with these families and potentially then using that attention through the account to target people who might want to buy products. So we're looking at brands and experiences.
So really, in some cases, it's actually parents and guardians that are exploiting their children. They are putting them to work in inverted commas.
It is a type of child labour, so that's what I identify within the project of taking it beyond that kind of chair and a cute picture of your kid because they look beautiful or you know, they're in their communion dress or whatever. It's taking it a step further where there is some economic incentive and it demands a lot of like prompting, propping, scripting, editing. You know, I don't know if you're a parent yourself, mm-hmm. but trying to get a kid dressed and out and anywhere looking great can be a chore at the best of times, never mind a child having to do that to camera, making sure they
But the problem
the
is too, and the one thing I know from my children and they're a bit older and some are young, too young, but and their peers is a lot of them would say, well, what do you want to do when you grow up now? And it used to be, you know, fireman, space, whatever it might be. And now it's like, I want to be an influencer. I want to be a YouTuber and stuff like that there. So there is obviously already a seed planted in the minds of some of these young children. And then they're, I suppose, they're being assisted by the people charged with carrying them to achieve their dreams, in inverted commas.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of reasons why parents are doing this, and it's kind of socially accepted. So there's nothing saying that this is a bad thing to do. I'm kind of reluctant to use words like exploitation or you know, that they're making money through the children. There's a number of reasons why parents are behaving this way. And the aim of the project isn't to be judgmental or prohibitive of that, but to try and develop best practice guidance in this area because there aren't any laws prohibiting it. And even other child labour laws, like for models and actors, don't apply. So there's a number of reasons why parents do this. They might have their own story to share. For example, if the child has SEN needs, or if they've, you know, the same gender parents, for example. We've got people who have gotten famous in this lifestyle themselves and are now having children. So people have been on, you know, Your Love Island, or people who were influencers like Zoella back in the day are now having children themselves and bringing their children into this economy.
And also too, that if you don't mind, Francis, too, there's no informed consent here either. You know, like if you are using your children for, you know, a like harvesting or whatever it might be, or scrolls or views or what have you, I mean, they're not able really to consent to that. And, you know, when they hit 18, 19, 20 and their entire life has sort of is on the internet, and we know once it's there, it never goes away. I mean, that's a big call for a parent to make to do that. I mean, I can differentiate between, you know, family photos on social media, and some people do block out the kids' faces. I do see that. But this is a next level kind of stuff. This isn't sort of sharing with family and friends either, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the consenting for child performers more generally would be an issue. You know, the Fairy Liquid Baby didn't consent to be the Fairy Liquid Baby, and the Milky Bar Kid, there's always been a Milky Bar Kid. You know what I mean? The difference here is obviously these are real children doing real things in their real homes.
But they're not acting. This is their lives. You know, the Milky Bar Kid's tough and strong, but he's wearing a cowboy hat, you know, and
exactly.
stuff. This is not him, you know, a camera following him in his every or her in their everyday life.
Exactly. And that's some of the harms that survey looks at and is trying to talk to parents about. You know, they mightn't even have thought about this in terms of a risk to their child. So wanting to engage with them and have this conversation. There was a select committee hearing in the UK where parents wouldn't go because they felt that these sorts of words would be used about them in relation to poor judgment, exploitation, etc. And, you know, look, this is happening and the kids are on there. So it's just time to start having the conversation about what it looks like to make sure that there's better safeguarding.
Yeah. And also, like, there have been some very high profile cases in this area. But also, what I've seen on Twitter is going back a bit. There was a big push on this a year or two ago, whereby, you know, parents were being called out, and I saw a couple of the videos on that platform, and it felt very wrong. Do you know what I mean? And then there was sometimes when there was a couple of occasions where the camera continued to roll, and the parent didn't realise it. So what we saw was the video they were trying to present. And then the child being told, you didn't do that correctly, you should have done it this way. That's probably the extreme. But if a few of those get leaked, that's the tip of the iceberg, potentially.
Absolutely. It's like, if we're talking about this from a risk assessment process, which is what the project's trying to do, you know, people don't throw bleach in their eyes or their face or whatever, but there's a whole guidance on the back of the bottle of bleach about how to behave around bleach. So when you're talking about those kind of horrific instances, I'm thinking about those extremes. And unfortunately, working in this area, I'm hearing about the extremes. So it's about talking to people across that spectrum of behaviours, understanding that, yes, at the rough end of this, there could be children who are being coerced into behaving in this way. And, you know, the New York Times did an expose last week around sexualization of young girls. I was very interested to see, even in that press coverage, they didn't use the picture itself. They described the picture. I think that's an important approach as well. It's not calling families out, not calling children out when we're talking about this issue.
This is all new, isn't it? And there's no...
Yeah,
I think, too, what parents, and I think particularly parents of young girls can do, it's an exercise any of them can do, is look at, particularly in TikTok, look at the videos that are being posted, but very importantly, look at them, be how many times they're favorited, not liked, but how many times they're favorited, which means if someone does that, they have access to that whenever they like. And then if it's a lot, maybe look at the video and say, wonder why on this platform that's primarily adults, why this video is being favorited. It's sad, and you don't maybe sometimes want to face up to that, but I think it would be a very useful exercise for people to say, well, who's favouriting that video and why are they favouriting it?
Exactly. And that's the New York Times article looked at the people who were making comments and the sorts of comments they were making. I think we can all imagine how horrific that might be if you've got a 9-year-old wearing something skimpy bent into a specific position. So, you know, they do exist, they're out there, and that's one of the areas that the survey talks about. You know, are you thinking about how your child's posed and what they're wearing, because that could send a certain message. So, you know, I've identified 32 types of harms endemic in this behavior for parents to look at this survey, think about if they do this themselves, have they thought about this as a potential risk, and if they do and have thought about it as a risk and experience it, what are they doing to mitigate it? You know, where are they locking the bleach? You know, how are they dealing with this as a risk assessment practice? Because you've effectively made your home a workplace now.
Yeah, and I think it's really, helpful, Doctor, how you're approaching this from a non-judgmental point of view. There are people who are knowingly, willingly exploiting children. There are others that say, hey, it's just modern society, isn't it? What difference can it make? And they themselves, you know, maybe have been exploited, as you say, you know, former celebrity stars. I know you don't want to use the word exploit as well, excuse me for that. But you're saying, look, you may not realise that there's an increased exposure to identity fraud, invasion of privacy. You may not realise that there's an increased exposure to bullying and harassment. You may not realise there's an impact on the dignity and reputation. And you also may not realise there's an impact on family relations, i.e. different opinions on whether a child should be working as an influencer. So this is about awareness and saying, stop and think, does any of this resonate with you? You might think you're doing the right thing for your child. Do you need to double check yourself that perhaps maybe that you're good intentions are somewhat misplaced?
Yes, exactly. And having those moments of, this is another thing we're going to have to check in with our child about. Are they okay with the content? Would they like it edited or removed? Are they okay in terms of their own self-esteem and hearing other people's opinions about them and their behaviours? Do they need mental health support in moments of crisis? And it is, it's like behaving as if you're an employer of theirs now. Yeah. It's escalating the parental responsibility up beyond, you know, just keep them safe and dressed and fed, into this, oh, okay, well, we've kind of got a workplace now. It's a family business and I'm going to have to mind them in that way.
Yeah. And I mean, you do also have to question as well. You talked of the case of what most of us would see as an inappropriate representation of a 9-year-old. I don't know the exact way, but say that was on TikTok and someone played that a couple of times and liked it. The algorithms of such that TikTok will find more similar aged girls or boys in similar attire, in similar poses, and actually feed that to the user. That is how it works. I don't think anyone would want to sort of be a part of that or to think that that was actually happening. But that precisely is, they will learn what the user likes and they will continue to present, in this example, a 9-year-old in those clothes, similar clothes, doing similar things. That's it's kind of icky, isn't it, when you think about it, that an algorithm will pick something like that up?
Absolutely. And that's what I mean in terms of, it's difficult to point the finger at parents or influencers in these situations, because they really are responding to a need and a drive. So we've got to get the people who are watching this held responsible and culpable in some way. The platforms, like you say, with the use of the AI and the generative data that encourages this to fester and to manifest in numerous ways. And the brands, you know, we're looking at brands who are providing leotards and swimsuits for these little girls to pose in and to endorse and to sell. You know, I don't walk down the street and see a billboard with an 8-year-old bent over in a leotard, but I can go to social media sites, say I like young girls gymnastics, and see a lot of those sorts of images and leotard brands promoting their wares. So there's a lot of people here around this who need to take accountability.
I mean,
and putting it on parents is kind of a bit of a cop-out, really. So I'm just trying to make them more aware.
There was, like, there was one dark web website that was exposed. I remember reading about it a couple of years ago. I'm not sure what the content was, but it was in this area that we're talking about. And in Ireland alone, there were 60,000 members of it. I don't know how you would describe it. It's a huge market, in inverted commas, and it's probably bigger than we would ever like to admit when we've got a small population of here of, you know, circa 6 or 7 million, depending on how you view it. But that was one database. You know, that's troubling, very, very troubling. And we have to protect our children. That's I see it's the only role I have of any real consequence. Dr. Francis Rees, thank you very much. I know this is kind of UK-based, but the EU probably watching, and I don't know, you know, it's definitely an area. I think that there's no one listening that wouldn't think that, right, we need to have a look at this. I think, having heard your comments, thanks for your time today. I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks ever so much for having me on.
No, it's our pleasure. Dr. Francis Rees there, lecturer in law at Essex Law School of the University of Essex. Any views on that, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Now, as you may well be aware, and if you're not, you certainly will be now, on Friday the 15th of March, Highland Radio celebrating its birthday, and we're raising money for three charities close to our hearts, Jigsaw Donegal, the Irish Wheelchair Association Donegal, and Breast Cancer Northwest. This morning, we're talking to one of our chosen charities, the Irish Wheelchair Association. We've a number of guests, and someone behind me, who's that? Hello. What? Look, you're sharing my camera. Don't be shy, look. I'm only joking. right, okay. We have Owen McFadden. Owen, thank you so much for calling in to us. It's great to have you with us.
Greg, thank you very
and
much
just
for having
me. Favour the microphone
thank
a little
you very
bit
much for
me.
Having us, Greg.
No, it's our pleasure, Owen. Talk to us about the Irish Wheelchair Association and its role in Donegal.
Okay. The Irish Wheelchair Association itself was formed in 1960. By a group of paramedics that came back from the Olympics. Since then, we have developed nationally. First it was in Dublin, but we are national now, and we continue to grow and develop. In 1998, the first centre was opened in Manorcunningham here in Letlhakenny. We started off with a centre and a small a donated bus at the time. We have continued to grow and develop. We are now based in Letlhakenny in a purpose-built centre, and we have approximately around 100 around the county Donegal attending that centre. We range from a range of activities coming in, and a lot of the work we do is based in the community as well. So it's we do take members coming into the centre, enjoy the day in the centre, but we also work with a lot in the community, going out and about. The Kiva, you talked to you later, like surfing, dining, anything's on the board. So and primarily we cater for a group that has a physical disability.
Yeah, Nicole Sheridan's with the Irish Wheelchair Association, Donegal 2. Nicole, what's your role within the association?
Hi, I'm Service Support Officer with the Irish Wheelchair Association. I've been working there 15 years now. So I help run the day centres and organise the activities we do in the community. So we would do anything from, as Owen said there, surfing, boccia, art, yoga, you name it, we've given anything a go. We have three centres throughout the county. We have one in Mallon, Carrigart and Letterkenny. So our service users come from all over the county and go to each of them.
Yeah, okay. And Owen, I'm going to speak to Kiefer and Martin in a second, but Owen, how important then, how is the Irish Wheelchair Association funded? Is it a mixture of state funding and fundraising?
That's correct, Greg. We're part funded by the HSE. We also have the Community Employment Scheme there as well, in association with the DSB, but we had to make up the shortfall. We are actually funded, the fund we do through fundraising, and at the present moment we are raising money for a new bus. Transport is a big issue in Donegal.
You've been waiting a long time for this new bus?
We have.
If my memory serves me correctly. We
actually got a new bus in the interim. And what's happening now at the moment is that one of the buses we had last year, we had to take off the road because the maintenance cost
became impractical.
It is, yeah. So we're in the process of raising money now for a new bus. It's an ongoing, issue with Donegal.
Because we have to travel to get anywhere, don't we? Yeah, and we have lots of stuff, but we do have to travel. Yeah. So the reason why that's important, the reason why I'm talking about fundraising, is that the Irish Wheelchair Association is one of our chosen charities. So next Friday, when we are imploring you and begging you to donate into a bucket in the Letterkenny Shopping Centre, or to ring in with a donation here, is that the photographer's phone that's just went off behind me? Was that yours?
Wasn't.
But the reason we're doing it, is to help and to keep the buses on the road, and to keep people like Kiva Begley happy. Kiva, you're very welcome back onto the program.
Morning, Greg.
How are you keeping?
I'm keeping good.
Very good. It's great to see you again. How important is the Irish Wheelchair Association to you, Kiva?
Well, the Irish Wheelchair Association is very important to me, as it helps me to socialise and meet new people. And meet people my own age. Whip.
And what stuff do you do that you enjoy doing with them?
Well, since I started Irish Wheelchair, I've been able to go surfing in Rosslauna. Before this, I've never experienced it before, and I absolutely love it.
Excellent. And can you do that regularly, or is it every now and again?
In the summertime. Mainly in the summer.
Clever girl. It's freezing up there at the moment. But so you're looking forward to another season of surfing?
Yes.
Okay, brilliant. Is there any other stuff that you do or stuff that you want to try?
Well, we're actually doing art next week.
Okay, brilliant.
Yeah, I love that too.
Okay, brilliant. And have you got a knack or are you working on it? Have you produced anything, any art yet?
Well, I've done some paintings and...
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, you must get us some pictures in so we can have a look at them if you don't mind, Kiva. Martin Cassidy is also a service user with the Irish Wheelchair Association. Martin, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And I think you are in a building that you kind of, you're to blame.
I've done a lot of work in the time.
You worked building this building.
I've done a lot of work for George Bowl here.
Brilliant. The late, great George Bowl.
The floors in and all that. In it.
Okay. How long have you been a wheelchair user, Martin?
About 5 years now. Mm-hmm. Four or five years, you know.
So you kind of had to adapt to a new way of living your life. Yeah. How helpful was the
wheelchair was a lifeline for me.
Yeah.
It's great now they came to the house. Come and pick me up and everything. Come through the COVID and all that, they get called every week.
Yeah.
With exercise papers and all that with them. It was a great system.
Before you used a wheelchair, would you have been very familiar with the work of the Irish Wheelchair Association?
I didn't really know. I was asked to come up sometime and try it out. And I went up 8 years later, I'm still there.
And was that a tough decision for you? Because sometimes we can be a wee bit stubborn in looking for help, or were you happy enough?
No. That's been going up and check it out.
Yeah.
I'm still there.
And what does the Irish Wheelchair bring to your Irish Wheelchair Association bring to your life, Martin?
Brought a lot of things to my life now, the Finland forums and all that, and they're a great help and a great organisation. You'd be lost without them in the area.
Yeah, fantastic.
Take you out, pick you up and take you out and socialise and all that.
And what kind of activities do you do, or do you like doing with the IWA?
I do a wee bit of art time sometime, maybe go to the cinema and out for meals and all that.
And that's all through the Irish Wheelchair Association?
That's all through the Irish Wheelchair. Wow. Great organisation for the area.
I think sometimes, you know, for those who have been in the situation, or those who, any of us could find ourselves in the situation, is that we'd miss out, or that we can't do things that we used to do, or our life could be over. I've spoken to a lot of people that had those emotions, but that's not the way with you. You're living life to its fullest.
My life really turned around,
since
I joined them, you know. So.
And, Nicole, these are just two people's experiences. It's a familiar story, I'm sure, that you are very clever. Mm-hmm. You are off camera too, which I'm not happy about.
Great.
But anyway,
it's great.
I know, Nicole, and you put on your nice shirt and everything. But come here. This is typical, I presume, of the feedback you get from service users. Sounds a little bit, I don't think it's that sounds a little bit clinical, doesn't it? It's more than that, isn't it?
Yeah. Everybody comes into the centre. Most people wouldn't have got their disability from birth. They would have acquired it, so it could have been acquired by an injury, MS, stroke. But there is a whole load of disabilities that come into us.
Yeah, so, and in that situation, it's a different story for those people, isn't it? It's a transition, it's a change, mm-hmm. it's an adaptation, and yous are fully equipped to help in all of that. It's not simply saying, and it's not simple, but we can pick you up and drop you off. There's much more to it than that, isn't
it? When everybody comes to the day centre, we support them throughout the day. If that be personal care, supporting with feeding, anything like that there, we do as well.
Yeah. Owen, it must be, you know, it's about, I suppose, maintaining what's there, but always looking to the future, be it maintaining the bus service that's there, be it saying, well, what else can we do? It all comes down to money, really.
It comes down to money, it comes down to funding, and to deliver the service you need a bit of both, you know what I mean? We have a state-of-the-art building, fully equipped. We can cater for any disability coming into the building, so we're lucky like that there. A lot of organisations share that building with us when they're about to town and all that as well, so we have the facilities. We have members sitting at home that would like to get maybe an extra day, and we can't do that because we're short of transport. Transport is the big one. And it's the rural isolation, but it's one of many factors. That funding is another one. Getting staff coming in as well is another one. So there is a few different elements. Costs of living have gone up, so it all affects the services.
Yeah, exactly. And you see it. You see the trend over time. So, and the bus, we talk about a bus. You know, I could have a bus and I could say, well, there's a bus.
Yeah.
It's not as simple as that. It has to be potentially adapted. It has to be very user friendly.
It has, yes. It has to be fully adapted. It has to be fully converted. There's a fair old cost in that there. A lot of members now attend the centre would be wheelchair users.
Yes.
But not all, like. And the problem is that you put one or two chairs on the bus, that's the bus to full the capacity, like, you know. So we're looking for a slightly bigger bus at the moment and carry a bit more capacity and allow more people to avail of the services we have.
For sure.
And particularly in the evenings and all that. If you go out in a group, it's nice to take a group with you. And they love, like Sakiva and them, they love socialising, like, you know, and they love going out as a group. Maybe like 10 of them go out together at their own age.
Yeah.
And that's what you want to do. Doing a lot more in the community rather than being centre-based.
Yeah. And it's not about the bus, but the bus is important. And we know ourselves, I think they were pricing up a bus here.
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't say it, but they shouldn't tell me stuff if they don't want me to say it. That's their problem, not mine, right? But when you talk of the cost of the bus, even for what we're doing, right, for outside broadcasts, the cost of the bus there, but the adaptation costs is massive. And in your case, you're probably talking lifts and all that type of stuff. You know, it's huge, huge cost. So
then it all has to be maintained and serviced after that. It's just not a case of having it.
So again, listeners, it's your generosity that keeps the likes of Owen and Nicole doing what they're doing, that keeps Martin doing what he's doing, what keeps Kiva doing what they're doing. The Irish Wheelchair Association, I've never heard a bad word about them. And next Friday, we're going to be calling on you to be as generous as you possibly can be. And generosity can be €2 or €22. It's all relative, okay? And we're going to be helping to hopefully get the Irish Wheelchair Association on the road and doing the great work. We're also supporting Jigsaw Donegal and Breast Cancer Northwest. So, Kiva, is it all eyes on the summer now at this stage? You're looking forward to the summer like me. I just want the summer to come now. I don't want to wish my life away, but why is it not the summer now?
Hello. Bring on the summer.
Is there any places other than Rosnala, Kiva, that you like to visit around Donegal that you go, they go, right, we're going here, and you go, woohoo?
Just to go to the South Seal. Because you don't realise how big Donegal is until you actually go around and see it. Like, so just seeing new places.
Exactly. And we are making slight inroads in terms of things like changing spaces, and there's some great work being done down in Port New, isn't it? Where and what have you. So we're hopefully moving in the right direction. Martin, you talked about going to the cinema and what have you, getting out and about. What other stuff do you like to do?
Yeah. What other stuff? Well, maybe more bocce or play bocce up there, you know.
You play?
We're playing bocce.
Bocce?
Bocce.
Bocce. What's bocce?
It's called bocce.
Right, what is it?
We used to have a team going. Throw the balls, red balls and white balls and blue balls.
Oh, right, okay, so it's near like a jack, is it?
It's it's like bowls,
So it's like the French game.
Yeah. Something similar to bowls,
and stuff, bocce. Yeah. All right, okay.
Two teams.
Brilliant.
With a bocce team going one time.
I want to take you on now. I'm very competitive.
So we're hoping to go to Sligo shortly and play down Sligo.
Okay. Right, that's look forward to, right? So, listen, thank you all very much. Is there anything, Owen, that you want to add, by the way, too?
No, listen, down through the years, I'm always amazed at the generosity of the public and how they support the IWA anytime we're out and about. It's a big ask again at the moment, and it's really, really appreciated the help, support, and the commitment they give us down through the years.
But we're helping ourselves as well, too. It's like, do you know, it's not like we are helping the Irish Wheelchair Association, but it could be any of us at any time.
It could be us tomorrow.
It's that service being there. You never know.
It's that service being there. And listen, we are open. We have a centre down there. If anybody wants to call any time and say hello to us, if they want to get in touch with myself and Nicole or just call the main reception line, we'll certainly talk to them. And if they want any advice on anything, we have the School of Motoring there as well. Anybody wanting to get back on the road or anything like that there, we do all that as well. So there's a multitude of services there, from the home support as well, everything. It's all there.
Brilliant stuff. Yeah. And long may it continue and grow. Nicole, anything you want to add?
Thank you very much to Highland Radio for choosing us as one of your charities, and we hope to work with you again in the future.
Of course. Kiva, have you anything to say? You've always got something to say.
No, I think that's everything. I would just like to thank you very much.
Brilliant stuff. And you mostly spend your time with Nicole with the IWA, do you?
Yeah, Nicole and Martin.
And what are they like?
Oh, they're good crack.
I wouldn't ask you because it wouldn't be fair if you had a favourite.
No.
I'm joking, I'm not even going to allow you to answer. Okay, pretty stuff. Martin, thanks for joining us. It's nice actually for you to be back in the building that you helped to build with George and the crew.
Oh yes.
Yeah. How long ago would that be now?
God's Easter time. I remember Easter time, and I think
so. It's coming up on an anniversary.
They're also working up the masts as well.
Oh, really? Okay.
One down Burnfoot and one down Moore Island.
So, were you sort of? Did you work in that area, like in telecommunications, or did you just were
no,
you handy
I was actually
doing
working
anything
for George?
Right. Okay. Brilliant.
George Bowles in charge. I'm a pack of Kinney.
So you had to be a jack of all trades, as they say.
Jack of all trades.
Don't say the next bit. Don't say the next bit. Okay, listen, Martin, it's been lovely having you on the programme. Thank you so much for calling in. Kiva, it's always a pleasure. Don't leave it so long the next time.
No, I won't.
All right, please, because I do love having you up on the show. And also Owen McFadden, Service Coordinator at the Irish Wheelchair Association, and of course Nicole Sheridan. And this mysterious person behind me with the... Is anyone going to give her a name?
That's Roisin Geller.
Oh, that's Roisin. Oh, you're... Sorry, Eva. I did not know Roisin was over my shoulder when I asked you that question.
You're okay.
I am so sorry. I thought this was somebody else. No. I didn't know it was Roisin. Okay. All of you, thank you so very much indeed.
Very
we
much
look forward to next Friday now. And it's lovely
of course, yeah.
It's lovely to actually put voices and faces and names to the people that we hopefully will all be supporting. And Nicole, keep up the fantastic work that you do, and Roisin and Owen. And again, thank you very much to Kiva and Martin. Lovely to have
you. Thank you
very
much.
Thank you.
Back after the break. Now, we read on the front of the Tyrconnell Tribune that, and it's kind of tongue-in-cheek and it's cleverly worded, that the Fanad polling station is... no more. Councillor Liam Blaney obviously is from the area and joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you. Thank you very much indeed for your time, Liam.
Good morning, Greg. Not a bother.
Right, okay. So what's the story with the polling station in Port Salon? Is it off the list for tomorrow?
Well, the school that has been hosting the polling station for a long number of years closed at the end of September last year, or at the end of June last year. It's no longer a national school, and the county registrar's office did make contact with the owners, and obviously they couldn't come to an agreement. But fortunately enough, it's from Bad National School, which is within the booth area of the Crowers National School, and one of the Crowers booth. Or the Port Salon booth,
yeah,
sorry.
No problem.
Has agreed to host it for tomorrow anyway.
So where is it going to be tomorrow,
sure,
sorry?
It's going to be in Drumfad National School.
Drumfad, okay.
Drumfad National School, opposite Ballinashanna.
No problem. Just in relation to the national school, the one that closed, is that in private ownership, or do the HSE own that, or do we know?
It belongs to people in the parish. I think the priest is a person that... that looks after it, and
he made the call then, potentially.
The county registrar's office had been in contact with our priest, as far as I'm aware, and they had negotiations on it, but the school has been closed this last while, and I suppose there's been a bit of maybe work to do to it, cleaning it and heating it and everything,
yeah.
So they took it to, it was agreed to take it to some Fadium, and they couldn't come to an agreement.
And you've got the local knowledge, Liam, how far is the Port Salon school to Drumfad?
It is roughly about a mile and a half, maybe.
Right, okay. So it is a wee bit more inconvenient. More convenient for some. Okay.
Yeah. More convenient for some and more inconvenient for others, right?
Yeah, right. Okay.
And
well, that's
unfortunately, that's the way it is. Mm. And maybe if the people decide that they want to have Port Salon opened again, we'll do what we can to try and have it open again. But unfortunately, this came late in the day, and there wasn't much time to negotiate on it.
Okay, well, that's the facts. Whether people are in favour or other, it is just the way it is. All right, Councillor Blaney, thanks for your time.
All right, Greg, thanks.
Take care of yourself, Councillor Liam Blaney there. So that's the answer to that. Can you find out what is the holdup with roadworks on the Cockhill Road? There's traffic lights there for ages and was supposed to be finished at the end of January. For that listener from Clonmany, can you let her know the public representatives don't care about the people in rural communities? In fact, they've turned their backs on the people in regards to the defective concrete blocks crisis. That's their view. Many would feel different. There's a discrimination that nobody's allowed to talk about in Ireland, and that is against the English. Most of us English who live in Donegal are now aware of Ireland's history. However, this is not taught in schools in England, so we really know nothing about the history when we arrive. And versions of history, isn't there, reported everywhere. Indeed, I'm sure that is a thing. Actually, three or four people have texted in from England saying the same thing. Right, time for me actually to give a push to this. It is the Community Hero 2024. Now, lots of us know people in our lives that are heroes. They work in the community, they work with others, they go above and beyond. They might be on the Tidy Towns Committee, they could be part of the first responders, they could be just lifting people here and there. They're all heroes, okay? So when we talk about a community hero, we're not necessarily talking about, or we aren't excluding them, someone who's done a heroic act in the traditional sense. They're everyday heroes. And we want to reward five of those community heroes from across the region with €1,000 each. And it's just to say thanks. It's a recognition. And we're able to do this thanks to an anonymous donation to the station. So we want to honour five community heroes, each with €1,000 each. Now, if you believe that someone in your life deserves a nomination, please don't just think about it. Put it in an email. Send their name, address, the reason why you believe they are a community hero, and your contact details to hero@highlandradio.com. You don't have to write an essay. You don't have to write a long story. You can do, but you just give us the headlines and we can work from there. If you don't use email, and it's simple, hero@highlandradio.com, you can post your nominations to Highland Radio Mountaintop, Letterkenny, County Donegal. Now, the closing day for entrance is just over a week away, the 18th of March, and hopefully we'll be able to contact the winners and honour the winners. It's not a competition, it's to honour those that are nominated before the end of March. Visit highlandradio.com for more. We're back tomorrow with the Friday panel. That's entertainment and so much more besides. So please tune in from 9. Thanks to all of you who listen to the show, those of you who watch the programme across our various social medias. It's been great having you on board. Looking forward already to coming back tomorrow at 9.